window. "Firebomb!" Connie said. We ran to the house to make sure everyone got out, and just as we reached the house, three men ran from the opposite side, jumped into the SUV, and took off. Hard to tell in the dark if one of them was Vinny. It all happened so fast. There was a small explosion from somewhere inside, windows blew out, and flames shot out the windows and licked up the side of the house.
"We need to get out of here," Connie said. "We need to get to the car before the police and the fire truck show up. The police will wonder why a car's parked there."
I grabbed my purse and the box of stink bombs, and we hustled down the road with Lula in the lead holding her flashlight.
"Boy, Bobbit Sunflower is a really unpopular person," Lula said. "You gotta get in line to bomb his house."
We were walking fast. I was sweating holding the box of stink bombs, and I could hear Lula breathing hard behind me. We were almost to Lower Bucks Road when we heard the sirens.
"Crap," Connie said. "How did it get here so fast?"
I hiked my bag farther up on my shoulder. I'm sure the house had a security system, and fire always goes directly to police and the fire department. A police car was the first on the scene. It turned onto the dirt road, and we jumped into the woods. A second car was close behind, but it stopped on Lower Bucks Road behind Connie's SUV.
"I'm screwed," Connie said.
The cop sat in his car for what seemed like an eternity. Finally, the driver's door opened on the cop car, and the cop got out and walked to Connie's SUV. A beam of light swept over the SUV. We held our breath and didn't move. A fire truck chugged past and turned onto the dirt road. It was followed by an EMT truck. The cop returned to his car, pulled onto the road, and turned into the dirt road. Connie called the Trenton police and reported her brother's car stolen.
"I parked it at Quaker Bridge Mall," she said, "and I just came out of Macy's and it's not here."
She gave all the necessary information and said she had a ride coming and needed to get home.
"That was quick thinking," Lula said. "It would be good if Bobby Sunflower found out we were parked here. He'd think we were the fire bombers. The police probably would think that too."
"Unfortunately, we can't use the car to get home," Connie said. "We're gonna have to leave it here."
"I bet your brother's gonna be pissed," Lula said.
Connie shrugged.
"He'll understand."
Connie's family took crime in stride. It was a family activity.
"So how are we gonna get home?" Lula wanted to know. "It's getting late, and I got television shows I want to watch."
"My brother Tony would pick us up, but his car's on the side of the road," Connie said.
"I got no one," Lula said. "I don't got a special someone in my life right now."
I shoved my hand in my pocket and came up with Mooner's card. The RV creaked to a stop behind Connie's SUV, and Mooner leaned out the driver's side window.
"Have no fear, Mooner's here," he said.
"What the heck is this?"
Lula said, taking in the hand-painted peace signs, swirly wind and star symbols on the side of the bus.
"It's a motorhome," Mooner said. "It's a quality recreational vehicle."
Connie sniffed the air drifting out the open window.
"It smells like dog."
"Yep," Mooner said, "and it comes by it, honest."
We scrambled inside and looked for a place to sit. The walls were covered in velvet-like leopard print fabric. The couches and chairs were upholstered in fuzzy faux zebra. The table and kitchen counter were red formica. Even in the dark of night, it was a migraine.
"This here's real nice," Lula said. "Surprisingly plush. Of course, I'm an animal print person myself, so I appreciate the decor."
"I did it myself," Mooner said. "I was going for retro Animal Kingdom."
Mooner ground the RV into gear, performed a U-turn at the dirt road, and headed back to Trenton.
"Were you ladies attending the bonfire?" he asked. "It has to be mega. I could see the glow from the bridge."
"We didn't go to the bonfire," I told him. "We were just riding around and the car broke down."
"I could turn this bus around and take you to the fire if you want," Mooner said.
"Not necessary," I told him. "You've seen one fire, you've seen them all."
"So true," Mooner said. "Personally, I'm more a wind man. Wind rocks."
Mooner dropped Connie off at her brother's house so she could retrieve her car, and he took Lula and me back to the bonds office. Lula got into her Firebird and drove away, and I walked back to the Jeep, where Morelli was waiting for me. He was lounging against the Jeep, arms crossed over his chest.
Hey, I said, what's up?
You were asking about Bobby Sunflower, so I thought you'd want to know one of his properties burned to the ground tonight.
Which one burned?
His Pennsylvania house.
Was anyone in the house?
It's too early to tell. No one was rescued.
Morelli wrapped me in his arms and nuzzled my hair.
You smell smoky,
he said. Must be from Mooner's motorhome. He took us for a demo ride.
It's not nice to lie,
Morelli said. Our eyes locked. Do you honestly want the truth? I asked him. Morelli thought about it for a beat.
No,
he said. I stood on tiptoes and kissed him on the nose. It's late. I have to go home. I have a big day of bounty huntering tomorrow. His arms were still locked around me.
I could go home with you.
You'd go home with someone who might be a liar?
Yeah,
Morelli said.
I'm getting desperate.
You were the one who wanted to break up. You said I wasn't relationship material.
I didn't say that.
You did!
Can I take it back? I hadn't had my coffee yet, and I needed...
I narrowed my eyes at him. You needed what?
Toast,
Morelli said. He blew out a sigh.
This isn't gonna happen tonight, is it?
No. I was getting mad all over again. No one pushed my buttons like Morelli. I mean, why was I the one who had to remember to buy the bread? Okay, in all honesty, I thought this was a pretty stupid thing to break up over. And in all honesty, I should have remembered to buy bread. That didn't alter the fact that I was mad. Mad wasn't a reasonable emotion. And the truth was, I wasn't entirely sure if I was mad at Morelli or mad at myself. Chapter 10. I rolled into the bonds office at 9 o'clock. Connie was at her desk. Lula hadn't as yet arrived. Have you heard anything about the fire? I asked Connie.
So far, no bodies found. Word on the street is there's a war going on between Bobby Sunflower and some under-the-radar mob guy.
Did your brother get his car back?
He's picking it up from impound today. The police suspect it was stolen by someone associated with the fire.
Only tangentially.
That's a big word, Connie said.
I heard it on television. I'm pretty sure I used it right. The phone rang, and Connie answered.
Yeah, she said to the caller. I understand.
She hung up and looked at me.
That was a reminder that we have 2 days left to come up with the money, and it's now grown to 1,000,001.
At least we know Vinny didn't burn up in the house.
Looks that way. I suppose it's a good thing, although I'm starting to think it might be easier just to look for a new job.
Lula bustled in.
What'd I miss? Did I miss anything? I overslept, and then I couldn't figure out what to wear, and my coffee pot's broke, so I had to stop at Starbucks, and the line was out the door.
We found out Vinny didn't burn up in the house, I told her.
Huh, Lula said. But then, on the bright side, since he isn't dead, we might get to use a stink bomb after all. Every cloud is a silver lining,
Connie said.
You got bags under your eyes, Lula said to me. You spend the night with Morelli?
No. We're in the off-again phase of our on-again, off-again relationship, I told her. It was just one of those sleepless nights. I had bags under my eyes because I'd thrashed around all night in a state over bread. And then I was in a state because I had 2 men in my life and I had no clue what to do with them. I loved them each in different ways, and I was too traditional and Catholic to just enjoy them. How sick is that? I wasn't a practicing Catholic, but I had guilt, and I was stuck with all these rules about relationships. And then there was my mother, who I suspect was mortally afraid I'd end up with Ranger, and my grandmother, who probably thought I was an idiot not to be sleeping with both of them, and my father, who didn't think there was a man alive who was worthy of me. So I'd probably gotten about an hour's sleep last night. And then Chet had called at 7 o'clock, mid-morning for Ranger's team. This morning Chet called with a list of properties Sunflower owns through his holding company, I told Connie and Lula. I'm going to do a drive-by on everything that's local.
I'm up for that, Lula said. It's a nice sunny day out, perfect for riding around. Maybe we should put the top down on the Jeep.
For the most part, the holding company owned commercial real estate that was leased out to a variety of businesses. A supermarket, a dry cleaner, a pet store, a hair salon, a natural food store, and a couple empty lots.
This is interesting, Lula said. Here's this sunflower guy who's real bad, making his money off prostitution and gambling and drugs. And then he's got this whole other side that's got legitimate, boring businesses. Don't you find that interesting? I mean, the man owns a natural food store.
He doesn't actually own the store. He owns the physical space.
Same difference. And a pet store filled with puppies and shit. I mean, can you see Bobby Sunflower selling puppies?
He doesn't personally sell puppies,
but suppose he did. Wouldn't that be weird?
I had driven past all the properties on Chet's list, and I was now parked on Liberty Street. Nothing on the list had the potential for holding Vinny captive. I don't know where to go from here, I said to Lula. I have 2 days to find Vinny, and I'm out of ideas.
I got ideas, Lula said. They're about lunch. I'm thinking nachos.
Good idea, I told her. I know just the place. I drove down Liberty to Broad and followed Broad across town to Marble Street. I pulled into the 7-Eleven lot and parked. Mickey Gritch was on the other side of the lot, conducting business as usual. I gave Lula a 20. Give me nachos and a drink. I'm going to talk to Mickey.
You sure you don't want me behind you doing backup?
No, I can manage on my own. I waited for a guy in a rumpled suit to walk away from Gritch. When the guy got in his car, I moved in. Hey, I said to Gritch, long time no see.
Not long enough, Gritch said. Get away from me, you're like poison.
How so?
I don't know, by association.
Talk to me, I said. Gritch rolled his engine over.
I'm leaving.
You can talk to me here, or you can talk to me at your house, I said. I know where you live. I had good luck with Ernie Wilkes with that threat. I figured I'd roll it out and try it again.
You wouldn't do that, Gritch said.
Yep, I said, I would.
That's not fair. A man's home is his castle.
Where's Vinny?
I don't know, I swear. I guess he was at Sunflower's house in Pennsylvania, but it got firebombed and they moved Vinny. I'm serious now. Walk away. Let Sunflower do whatever he has to do to Vinny. He's dealing with crazy people. I don't even know who they are, but they scare the crap out of me.
I need a name.
I don't have a name. I'm not a big player in the organization. I heard Bluto tossed around, but I don't know what it means. I don't know if it's a first name or a last name or a nickname.
Thanks, I said.
You're not going to visit me, are you?
No.
Nothing personal, but that's a relief.
I left Gritch to his lunch trade and went back to the Jeep. Lula swung in minutes later with 2 boxes of nachos and 2 giant-sized sodas. What about the one diet? I asked her. Aren't you only allowed to have 1 chip?
That diet isn't real specific about meaning 1 chip or 1 box of nachos. I'm thinking of quitting that diet anyway. It don't work. I think I'm going to have to look for a new diet.
I finished the nachos, and I was torn between going after Chopper and continuing to look for Vinny. If I caught Chopper, I might be able to get my car fixed. I loved the Jeep, but it wasn't mine. Eventually, it would have to be returned to Ranger, especially if I got back together with Morelli. Using one man's car and sleeping in another man's bed didn't work, at least not when the men were Ranger and Morelli. Of course, if I slept with Ranger, I might be able to keep the Jeep indefinitely.
What the heck are you thinking? Lula asked me. You're mumbling and rolling your eyes and sighing.
I was thinking I need to find Vinny. He only has 2 days left.
Do you think Sunflower would really kill Vinny?
Yes, I said. I think he'd kill Vinny.
I do too, Lula said. Sunflower's a bad man.
I finished my soda, collected the trash, and ran it over to the trash can by the door. I ran back and cranked the Jeep over.
Where are we going? Lula wanted to know. We've already been all over the place.
I have a hunch. They had to hustle Vinny out of the burning house and stash him someplace else. It would have to be someplace easy on short notice. Someplace like an apartment building.
The rat house.
Exactly. In 15 minutes, we were in front of the apartment building on Stark. The area around the apartment was quiet at this time of day, but a scrawny guy who I assumed had a big gun was slouched on a folding chair by the door.
That's like an advertisement Vinny's in there, Lula said.
Maybe. I drove around the corner and turned into the alley. We counted off units, and I idled behind the apartment building. The building had 6 parking spaces marked off in its small lot. The rest of the lot was given over to a dumpster. The black SUV was parked in one of the spaces. The building had a back door at ground level. One window with bars at ground level. No bars on the windows on the second, third, and fourth floors. A rusted fire escape clung precariously to the back of the building. "Try the back door," I said to Lula. Lula dropped out of the Jeep, crossed the lot, and tried the door. Locked. She got back into the Jeep.
"Now what?" Lula said. "I think he's in there, but I don't know if the stink bomb's gonna work. This place already smells like a stink bomb. Plus, they got a ticket taker on the front door."
"One of us needs to go in and look around."
"You?"
"No," I said. "You."
"Why me? I'm only the assistant bounty hunter, and I'm not even sure I want to rescue Vinny."
"You can get by the guy at the door. Tell him you're making a delivery to the nasty fat guy on the third floor."
"Am I going door to door selling Girl Scout cookies?"
"No. Once you get in, just look around and listen for voices." I dropped Lula off at the corner and watched her swing her ass past the funeral home and up to the guy at the door to the apartment building. She stood and talked to him for a short time, and then she went inside. After 10 minutes, I looked in my rearview mirror and spotted a Rangeman SUV double-parked in front of a bar half a block back. The cowardly part of me was happy to see them there, but the rest of my brain acknowledged that I led a weird life. I had a cop boyfriend who hated my job and tried to get me to quit. And I had a security expert potential lover who didn't tell me to quit my job, but had me under constant surveillance. I wasn't sure which was worse. Lula popped out of the building's open front door, and the door guard grabbed her by the arm. I was ready to roll if it looked like she was in danger. Not that I would be much good as a rescuer, but the two heavily armed, overly muscled guys on my bumper could do some damage. Lula jollied herself away from the door guard and sashayed down the sidewalk to where I was waiting. She got into the Jeep, I waved to the rangeman guys, and I drove off. "Well?" I asked her.
"He's there. He's in the back unit on the fourth floor. I could hear him talking. Sounded like they were playing cards."
"Any problems? Anyone see you?"
"Just a moron at the door, and he bought the whole line."
It was too late to catch Chopper at his lunch stops, and I wasn't in the mood to start looking for the toilet paper bandit, so I headed back to the office. I needed to talk to Connie anyway. It was one thing to find Vinny. It was a whole other deal to rescue him. As much as I would love to see Connie shoot off a stink bomb, I had serious doubts about it as a rescue aid. Seemed to me a stink bomb, like a firebomb, got everyone out of the building, but didn't give us an opportunity to snatch Vinny. I was halfway across town when Grandma Mazur called.
"I think I broke my foot," she said. "I was dancing to one of them workout videos, and I accidentally stubbed my toe on the coffee table, and now I think something's broke. At first I thought it wasn't broke, but it's turned purple, and it's all swelled up."
"Where's Mom?"
"She's at the beauty parlor, and your father's playing pinochle at his club, and I hate to call the ambulance people, because then I'll be a spectacle. There'll be rumors I'm dead. I just need you to give me a ride to the emergency room."
Chapter 11. Lula and I stood in the living room looking at Grandma's foot.
"It looks broke, all right," Lula said to Grandma. "That's one heck of an ugly foot you got there, but I like the polish you got on your toes. What's the name of that?" "Red Hot Rapture? Lucky I just painted them yesterday. Imagine breaking your foot when your toes weren't done up."
"Yeah,"
Lula said. "I'd hate that. Does it hurt?" "It used to, but I took a couple snorts of Jack Daniels, and I'm pretty happy."
"We need to get her to the car," I said to Lula.
"Okay," Lula said. "Do you want to carry her or drag her?"
"Can you hop?" I asked Grandma.
"I could before the Jack Daniels, but now I'm not so sure."
Lula got on one side of Grandma, and I got on the other, and we scooped Grandma up and got her out the door, down the sidewalk to the Jeep. I was afraid to alley-oop her, so I dragged her up onto the passenger seat.
"It's a shame we gotta go to the hospital," Grandma said. "I feel like having some fun. I wouldn't mind seeing some naked men."
"How much Jack did you have?" Lula asked.
"I don't need Jack to want to see naked men," Grandma said. "You get to be my age and there's not a whole lot of opportunity. I signed up for one of those porn movies on TV once, and it was all girls. You only got to see the men from the back. What good is that?"
"I hear you," Lula said.
St. Francis Hospital is about 3 minutes from my parents' house. I pulled into the emergency room drive-thru, offloaded Grandma into a wheelchair with Lula in charge, and hustled to the parking garage. By the time I got back to the emergency room, Grandma had been wheeled off somewhere to be evaluated, and Lula was busy reading magazines.
"This is an excellent emergency room," Lula said. "They got a good selection of magazines, and people tell me they know what they're doing when it comes to shootings and knifings on account of they get so much practice."
An hour later, they wheeled Grandma back to the waiting room with a big black boot thing on her foot.
"It's broke, all right," she said. "I got to see the x-ray."
"What do you got on your foot?" Lula wanted to know.
"The bone was just cracked a little, so they wrapped my foot up in this boot thing instead of putting it in a cast. I can walk on it and everything."
Grandma got out of the wheelchair and took the boot for a test drive. Step stomp, step stomp, step stomp. The boot came to mid-calf, was foam padded, and held secure with thick Velcro straps. The bottom of the boot was 2 inches of hard molded plastic. When Grandma walked, she was tipped to one side, since one leg was 2 inches longer now than the other.
"I feel gimpy in this boot," Grandma said, "and my butt cheeks don't match up. One feels higher than the other. I can't squeeze to keep the breezers in."
"We'll keep the windows open on the way home," Lula said.
Grandma looked down at the boot.
"It's pretty nifty, though. I can't wait to show this to your mother. I bet this could get us one of those handicap parking signs, and I got some pills for when the Jack Daniels wears off."
I brought the Jeep around to the drive-thru, boosted Grandma up into it, and drove her home. I called ahead, and my mother was waiting at curbside. "Here she is," I said, lowering Grandma down to my mother. "Almost as good as new."
"For the love of Pete," my mother said.
"I was doing a lunge, and I broke my foot," Grandma told her, "but it's only a little bit broke."
"I have to go," I said to my mother. "I have to get back to the office."
"Can you walk?" my mother asked my grandmother.
"Of course I can walk," Grandma said. "Look at this."
Step stomp, step stomp, step stomp.
"Whoops," Grandma said,
and she face planted on the grass. Lula and I jumped out of the Jeep and rushed over.
"It's the dang boot," Grandma said. "It's got me all lopsided."
Connie was at her desk when we walked into the bond's office.
"We would have been here sooner," Lula said, "but we had to go on a mission of mercy. Grandma Mazur broke her foot dancing to an exercise video, and we had to get her fixed up."
"Is she okay?" Connie asked. I took my usual seat in front of the desk. "Yes, they put her in an orthopedic boot and sent her home."
"And we got more news," Lula said. "We got good news and we got bad news, and it's all the same news. We found Vinny."
Connie's eyebrows rose a couple inches.
"Are you serious?"
"They've got him in a back apartment in Sunflower's building on Stark Street," I said. "Lula heard him through the door. They've got a guy in there with him, and there's a guy at the entrance downstairs. There aren't any bars on the back windows, and there's a rusted fire escape, but you'd die trying to get Vinny out that way."
"Do you have any ideas?" Connie asked me.
"No, none. And I don't think the stink bomb will work. They'll haul Vinny out of the building under armed guard, and they won't let go of him."
"We need a diversion," Lula said. "We need to get the guard out of the apartment. Then someone can go in and drag Vinny's worthless ass out of there."
"A diversion's a good idea," I said. "But how are we going to get Vinny down the stairs and out the door past the door guard?"
"We could disguise him," Lula said. "Put him in a wig and a dress or something."
I looked at Connie. "Do you think that'll fly?"
"Maybe if we have a diversion at the front door, too," Connie said.
"I can divert the guy at the front door," Lula said. "He likes me."
"I'll be the second diverter," Connie said. "That leaves Stephanie to get Vinny out."
"How are you going to divert him enough for me to get Vinny down the stairs? I don't think a wig's going to do it. And suppose you divert him out of the apartment, but he locks the door behind him. What then?"
"See, that's a problem with you," Lula said. "You're being a glasses half empty person. One of my outstanding qualities is my positive personality. You just gotta take precautions, like you need to bring a gun with bullets in it."
I pulled to the curb in front of the bond's office at precisely 9 o'clock. Connie was already there, and Lula slid to a stop behind me. I was dressed in black. I had a loaded gun pressed against my backbone, stuck into the back of my jeans. I had pepper spray in my pocket.
I had my cell phone clipped to my jeans waistband, set to dial range man. I had a stun gun also clipped to my jeans waistband. And I had premonitions of disaster. I had no confidence in the mission. Truth is, we sucked at this stuff. We were like the Three Stooges at Camp Commando. The only reason I was attempting it was because I knew Chet would spot me on Stark Street and send out a backup rangeman car. We assembled in front of the office to review the plan. Connie was wearing wedge heels, a short tight skirt, and a sweater that showed about a quarter mile of cleavage. Ditto Lula, substitute thigh-high hooker boots for the wedge heels. "I've been thinking about it," I said. "Our best shot at this is to get the back door open." I looked over at Lula. "If you can open the door for Connie and me, we can slip upstairs easier, and then we can bring Vinny out that way."
"You can count on me," Lula said. "What about cars?"
"We'll take the Jeep," I told her. "I'll drop you off on Stark Street, and then I'll park in the alley behind the building. After we escape with Vinny, I'll swing around and pick you up."
"Okie dokie," Lula said. "I'll be waiting for you."
We all piled into the Jeep, and by the time we got to Stark Street, my stomach was sick, and I had a grapefruit-sized lump of panic sitting in the middle of my throat. Lula got out at the corner and walked half a block to the apartment building. There was still a guard out front, but it was a different guy. I circled around and parked in the alley as planned. "This is going to work, right?" I said to Connie. "We won't get caught or killed or anything."
"Do you have the bottle with you?"
"It's in my purse."
"So that should help," Connie said.
Oh, geez, it was going to come down to the bottle. Connie got out of the Jeep and adjusted her girls.
"Vinny better appreciate this effort. It's not like I haven't got better things to do than save his ass," she said.
I reached under my seat and grabbed the 2-pound mag light that was standard equipment on all rangeman vehicles. It was also the weapon of choice for head bashing. There wasn't a lot of light in the alley. There were streetlights in place, but the bulbs had been shot out. We walked to the back of the building and looked up. Shades were drawn on the fourth floor windows. The black SUV was parked nose in to the building. I tried the back door. Locked. We both took a step back and waited in the shadows for Lula to unlock the door. I heard footsteps, the doorknob turned, and Lula looked out at us.
"The coast is clear," she said. "The door dummy went down the street to get something to smoke."
"Showtime," Connie said.
And she motored through the door, down the short hall, and wasted no time going up the stairs. I followed close behind, thinking I'd done equally dangerous and stupid things as a bounty hunter, but this was right up there with primo bonehead operations. We reached the fourth floor and looked around. Three doors, 4A and 4B, and nothing on the third door. I listened at the unnumbered door. Silence. I carefully tried the knob. Unlocked. Utility closet. I stepped into the closet and pulled the door almost entirely closed. I heard Connie rap on a door, heard the door open, muffled words. Connie was handing the guy a line about her girlfriend passed out on the second floor.
"And she's naked," Connie said, "and we both had too many cosmos, and I think we're in the wrong building."
I heard the apartment door click closed, and then footsteps on the stairs. I slipped out and went to 4B. The door was unlocked. I stepped inside and scanned the room. It was an efficiency with a small kitchenette on one side. Grease-stained pizza boxes on the counter. A card table and a folding chair. An ashtray overflowing with cigarettes. No couch, no television. No wonder Connie had an easy time with a guy who answered her knock. He had to be going nuts in here. I heard something rustle in the other room, and I was hoping it was Vinny, because the last time I heard something rustle like that, it turned out to be an alligator. I poked my head in and spotted Vinny handcuffed to a thick chain that stretched into the bathroom.
"Holy shit," Vinny said. "What the fuck?"
Vinny was wearing pointy-toed shiny black shoes, black socks, and black bikini briefs. Vinny fully dressed wasn't all that good. Vinny in black socks and briefs was a nightmare. "Where are your clothes?" I asked him.
"I haven't got any. This is what I was wearing when they snatched me."
There was a moment where I was actually debating leaving him there.
"I know what you're thinking," Vinny said, "and Grandma Plum and Aunt Mim would be very upset if you left me here and they killed me."
Okay, I said, but how am I supposed to rescue you when you're chained to the toilet?
You don't have a universal key? What kind of bounty hunter are you?
I didn't think I was going to be uncuffing anyone.
You never know when you'll come across someone, Vinny said. You should always have cuffs on you. This is why I'm losing money.
You're on thin ice here, I said to Vinny.
I know, he said. I'm sorry. It was nice of you to try to rescue me. You should get out before Snake comes back.
Snake?
Sosumi, that's his name, and he moves like a snake. He's creepy.
I'm not leaving without you, I said. Pull the chain tight. I took my gun out, aimed it at the chain at short range, and pulled the trigger. The chain jumped, and a link broke off. I rammed the gun back into my jeans, we ran to the other room, and just as we reached the door, Snake stepped over the threshold, gun drawn. His eyes flicked to Vinny, and in that instant, I whacked him in the head with a maglite. He went to the floor on hands and knees, and I heard more men thundering up the stairs. I booted Snake out of the room into the hall, slammed the door shut, and threw the bolt. Changing plans, I said to Vinny. Out the window. Vinny ran to the window, threw it open, and looked out.
Are you insane? We're four floors up.
Fire escape, I said.
It's rusted. It's junk.
The door rattled, and a body slammed into it, but the bolt held.
Go,
I said to Vinny, shoving him out the window.
Go!
The metal creaked under our weight, and chunks of metal flaked off when we ran down the stairs. No time to think about it.
This is falling apart underneath me,
Vinny yelled. Keep going, I yelled back. Don't stop! We were on the third floor. I grabbed a railing for support, and the railing gave way. The fire escape groaned and separated from the building.
Holy crap, Vinny said. Holy Mary, Mother of God!
The entire metal structure was disintegrating and collapsing into itself. We weren't exactly plummeting to the ground, but rather sliding toward it. And then the last bolt let go as we passed the second floor, and we were in free fall. The framework crashed onto the black SUV, and Vinny and I went flying off into space. One of the men leaned out the fourth floor window and fired off a shot. Two more shots were fired from the alley not far from me. I was on my back on the ground, all air knocked out of me. I was lifted to my feet and yanked toward the Jeep. It was Ranger. He had his hand clamped around my wrist, and he was running with me, half dragging me. We reached the Jeep. He hauled me up into the passenger seat, jumped in next to me, and spun the wheels, taking off.
Vinny, I said. Thank Azim.
I need to get Connie and Lula. They're on Stark Street. Ranger turned the corner and cruised by the building. Connie and Lula were on the sidewalk, looking like they were trying to stay calm, not having any luck at it. The door guard was gone, probably on the fourth floor. Connie and Lula scrambled into the back of the Jeep, and Ranger moved off with a Rangeman SUV on his tail.
So I guess that went well, Lula said.
Ranger slid a look at me.
Are you okay?
I nodded. I was having a hard time finding words. Chapter 12. Ranger took Connie and Lula to the office and waited while they got into their cars and drove away. The Rangeman SUV was still behind us, idling at the curb. Ranger called back and had Vinny transferred up to the Jeep.
Do I need to know why he's in his underwear? Ranger asked me.
That's how he was captured. Vinny climbed into the back, chain dangling from his handcuff, and Ranger took a universal handcuff key out of his pocket and handed it to Vinny.
I assume the first shot I heard was aimed at that chain, Ranger said to me.
I didn't have a handcuff key.
You're a bounty hunter, Ranger said. You always carry handcuffs.
I forgot, but I remembered my gun, and I whacked someone in the head with your maglite. Ranger smiled at me.
Babe.
I guess I need to go home, Vinny said.
That's not a good idea, I told him. Lucille isn't happy with you.
She'll get over it, Vinny said. She always does.
Ranger was waiting for my instructions. Take him home, I said to Ranger. Vinny lived in a large yellow and white colonial in Pennington. It looked like a house a normal person would own, but it belonged to Vinny. Go figure. Lucille made sure the lawn was mowed and the flower beds were mulched. White shears hung in the windows. It was close to 11 o'clock, and lights were off in the house. The sky was overcast, and there was no moon. Some light filtered onto Lucille's lawn from a streetlight half a block away. It was enough light to see there was debris scattered across the yard. Ranger pulled into the driveway, and Vinny jumped out.
"What the heck?" Vinny said, kicking through the debris. "This is my shirt and socks."
He walked to the door and rang the bell. He rang a second time.
"Hey," he yelled. "Hey, Lucille."
A light flashed on in an upstairs window. The window opened, and Lucille stuck her head out.
"Vinny?"
"Yeah, I've been rescued. Let me in. I don't have my key."
"Your key won't do you any good, you jerk. I had the locks changed. Get your perverted butt off my lawn."
"This is my lawn, too," Vinny said.
"The hell it is. My father bought this house for us, and it's in my name."
"It's common property, sweetie pie," Vinny said. "And you'll have to kill me to get my half."
"No problem," Lucille said.
She disappeared from the window, and Vinny started collecting his clothes.
"I can't believe she did this," he said. "Look at this silk shirt laying here in the mulch, and my hand-painted tie."
Lucille reappeared in the window with a shotgun, and she blasted one off at Vinny.
"You're trespassing," she said.
"What are you going to do, shoot me and call the police?" Vinny yelled at her.
"No, I called my father. He's on his way over."
"Her father's dumped so many bodies in the landfill, he has his own parking place," Ranger said.
Lucille squeezed off another shot, and Vinny scrambled to the Jeep with his arms full of clothes. Ranger put the Jeep in gear and backed out of the driveway.
"Your call," he said to me.
"Take him to the office." The black SUV was parked in front of the bond's office. There was a big gash in the hood, and the roof was smashed in over the cargo area. A second car was parked behind it. "Probably we don't want to stop here," I said to Ranger.
"Give me a gun. I'll take care of those assholes," Vinny said.
"You've caused enough trouble," I told him. "You're not getting a gun. And for crying out loud, put some clothes on. I'm going to have to disinfect the seat back there." Ranger cut off Hamilton into the burg and stopped at a cross street. "I don't suppose you'd want to take him home with you," I said to Ranger. Ranger glanced at Vinny in the rearview mirror.
"We could negotiate. The price would be high."
"Would I have to dress up like a geisha and rub your feet?" Ranger cut his eyes to me.
"It wasn't what I had in mind, but it would be a good place to start."
"Cripes," Vinny said. "You two want to get a room?"
"Tell me again why you rescued him," Ranger said.
I slid the maglite back under the driver's seat. "Grandma Plum and Aunt Mim."
"Maybe he can stay with them," Ranger said.
"Unfortunately, that's not an option," I said.
"He can stay with me tonight."
I gave Vinny a quilt and a pillow. "You can spend one night here," I said. "One night. Tomorrow you have to find a different place to live." Vinny dropped the quilt and pillow on the couch.
"I can't believe Lucille kicked me out."
"You were caught with a hooker."
"I was doing Lucille a favor. She's a good woman, but she's picky about a lot of stuff. Don't do this and don't do that. And what about me? I got needs. Okay, so I'm a pervert, but perverts got rights too. There are places where I'd be considered normal. Borneo, maybe. Atlantic City."
Good grief. I was gonna have to set off a roach bomb in my apartment after he left.
"Anyway, the problem isn't Lucille," Vinny said. "The big problem is Bobby Sunflower. You whacked one of his guys in the head, and you snatched me out from under him. He's not gonna like it."
"Would he have killed you if I hadn't gotten you out of there?"
"For sure. I was a dead man."
"All because you made some bad bets." Vinny remoted the television on, flipped through about 20 channels, and gave it up.
"Sunflower's in trouble. He needs money, and he needs respect. He's in the middle of a war, and he can't show weakness."
"What war? Who's he fighting?"
"I don't know. Maybe I should go into therapy at one of those sex addiction places. Do you think that would get me off the hook?"
"Maybe with Lucille. I don't think Harry'll buy it." My arm was scraped, and the knee was torn out of my jeans from the fall. It would have been a lot worse if we hadn't crashed into the SUV. I limped out of the living room, closed the door on Vinny, started to undress, and noticed I'd missed a call from Morelli on my cell phone.
"Hey,
Morelli said when I called him back. Hey, yourself.
Just checking to see if you're home. Shots were fired at Sunflower's apartment building tonight.
Is that unusual?
Good point,
Morelli said.
We also got a report of shots being fired from Vinny's house. Lucille said she was shooting at a rat.
That neighborhood's gone to hell in a handbasket.
Should I be worried?
Morelli asked me.
Hard to say.
Morelli disconnected, and I limped into the bathroom where I stood in the shower until all the rust was washed out of my hair. When I was done, I looked at the shampoo bottle. Empty. My refrigerator was also empty. I needed money. I needed to make another capture. Vinny was back to wearing only his underwear. He was in my kitchen, unshaven, his hair spiked up from sleep, his eyes half open.
Where's a coffee? He asked. Where's the orange juice?
I don't have any, I told him. I need to go shopping.
I need coffee. Lucille always had my coffee ready.
There's no Lucille, I told him. Get used to it. And after today, there's no me. You can't stay here.
Where will I go?
Stay with one of your friends.
I don't have friends, Vinny said. I have hookers and bookies, and my bookie wants to shoot me.
Do you have money? Vinny flapped his arms.
Do I look like I have money? My wallet was left behind with my pants. Maybe we should go back and check out the lawn in front of my house to see if Lucille tossed out cash and credit cards along with my clothes.
What about the office? Don't you keep petty cash? Doesn't Connie have a corporate credit card?
We might have a small cash flow problem, Vinny said.
How small?
We might be a million in the red, give or take a couple bucks.
What?
It's complicated, Vinny said. Bookkeeping issues. We have too many outstanding skips.
I have a stack of skips in my bag that I'm working on, but I don't think they add up to a million. And what about the bankers who underwrite you?
They aren't answering their phone.
Oh, boy. You've got 3 minutes to get dressed, I said to Vinny. I'm taking you to my parents' house. When they get fed up with you, I'll think of something else. At least you can get coffee there before my mother kicks you out. I debated calling ahead, but decided against it. If I dumped him on my mother's doorstep and drove away real fast, she'd have to take him in, at least for a while. If I called, she could say no. 20 minutes later, I idled in front of my parents' house while Vinny walked to the front door. On the rare possibility that no one was home, I didn't want to just drive off. He didn't have a cell phone to call me to come back. I saw the front door open, and I laid rubber. I drove by the office twice before I parked. I didn't see the bashed-in SUV, and I didn't see any angry-looking guys hanging out with guns drawn, so I figured things were quiet this morning. Connie was at her desk. Lula hadn't arrived.
You didn't bring Vinny with you, did you? Connie asked. I already had a visit from Bobby Sunflower this morning.
I poured myself a cup of coffee. He gets up early.
I guess he was motivated. He wants his money or he wants Vinny. He said if he didn't get either of those things by Friday, he was going to eliminate the office.
Eliminate it?
Like from the face of the earth.
Could be worse, I said. According to Vinny, this office is about a million in the red. Connie froze for a beat.
Vinny said that?
Yeah, didn't you know?
I don't do the books. Vinny has an accountant for that.
Maybe we should talk to the accountant.
The accountant's dead. He got run over by a truck last week. Twice.
That's not good.
No, Connie said. It's really not good.
Does Sunflower know we were the ones to spring Vinny?
Yeah, but I think it's too embarrassing to let go public. And I think he'd rather have the money than to see us shot full of holes.
I drank some coffee and took a donut from the box on Connie's desk. So we need to raise money.
It's up to a million, too.
Chopper is a pretty high bond. The toilet paper guy isn't worth much, but he might be easy to capture.
Butch Goody is worth something, Connie said.
I thought he skipped to Mexico.
I heard he got back last week, and he's working at the meatpacking plant.
Butch Goody is 6'6" tall and weighs about 300 pounds. He's wanted for exposing himself to 13 women over a period of 2 days. He said they were lucky to get to see Mr. Magic, and he blamed it on a sex enhancement drug that gave him a 32-hour erection. The judge who set Goody's bond asked for the name of the drug, wrote it on a piece of paper, and slipped the paper into his pocket. I'll put Goody at the head of the list, I said. Lula swung into the office.
At the head of what list?
The Catch'em list, I told her. We need to make money today.
So we're going after Butch Goody? I thought he was in Mexico.
He's back. He's working at the meatpacking plant.
I hate that place, Lula said. It gives me the creeps. You drive by with your windows open and you can hear cows mooing. You're only supposed to hear stuff like that on a farm. I mean, what the heck's the world coming to when you can hear cows mooing in Trenton? And who the heck would work at a meatpacking plant anyway?
Butch Goody, I said. The meatpacking plant was down by the river south of town, on the edge of a residential area that was blue-collar or no-collar. It took up half a block, with some of that space devoted to holding pens where the cattle went in, and some of the space devoted to loading docks where the hamburger meat came out. At 9:30 in the morning, the plant was in full swing. It was going to be a glorious, sunny, warm day, and the area around the plant smelled faintly of cow.
You know what this makes me think about?
Lula said, jumping down from the Jeep, standing in the parking lot.
It makes me think I could use a new leather handbag. If we get done early today, we should go to the mall.
I didn't think we were going to get done early. I expected this was going to be a very long day. It was Thursday, and there was no way we could get all of the money by bringing in a few skips. If we didn't come up with over $1 million by tomorrow, Grandma Plum and Aunt Mim were going to be wearing black. Chapter 13. Lula and I entered a small reception area and approached the woman at the front desk. I gave her my business card and told her I wanted to speak to Butch Goody. The woman ran her finger down a roster of names attached to a clipboard and located Goody.
He's helping unload cattle right now, she said. The easiest way to find him would be to go around the building from the outside. Just go out the door, turn left, and keep walking. You'll see an area around the corner where trucks are offloading, and Butch should be there.
I'm glad we didn't have to go through the building, Lula said, because I don't want to see them chopping up cows. I like thinking meat grows in the supermarket.
We turned the corner and came to an area where cattle were milling around in a pen.
What kind of cows do you suppose these are?
Lula asked.
Are these hamburger cows or steak cows?
I don't know, I said. All cows pretty much look the same to me.
Yeah, but some are bigger than others, and some got horns. These cows are hefty black cows. I guess they're my kind of cow,
Lula said. I had a photo of Butch. I'd tried to find him before he skipped to Mexico, so I had some idea of what I was looking for. And at 6'6 and 300 pounds, he shouldn't be that hard to spot. I scanned the holding area and picked him out, standing a foot taller than everyone else. He was watching over a gate that fed the cattle from a pen to a ramp that led into the building. I had cuffs tucked into the back of my jeans, but I wasn't sure they were big enough to fit around Butch's wrists. I had flexi-cuffs hooked onto a belt loop, but it was hard to be sneaky with flexi-cuffs. My hope was that I could talk him into going downtown with me to re-up for his court hearing. Stay here by the cattle truck, I said to Lula. I don't want to spook Butch by having both of us come at him. I'm going to circle around and try to talk to him.
Sure, Lula said. What do you want me to do if he bolts and runs?
Tackle him and cuff him, I said.
Okie dokie.
Butch was feeding the cattle one by one onto the ramp, concentrating on his job. I skirted the holding pen, moving behind an empty cattle truck, and I came up behind him. I had my cuff in my hand, taking measure of his gargantuan wrist, when he turned and saw me.
You, he said. I know you. You're the bounty hunter.
Yes, but...
I'm not going to jail. You can't make me. It wasn't my fault.
Butch jumped into the pen with the stupefied cows and ran for the gate by the truck. Lula saw him coming at her, opened the gate to tackle him, and the rest was the stuff nightmares are made of. When the gate creaked open, every cow picked its head up and sniffed freedom. Butch went through the gate first, knocking Lula on her ass against the fence. Butch was followed by a cow stampede. The cows galloped out of the pen into the parking lot and scattered. In a matter of seconds, not a single cow could be seen. Truck drivers and cow wranglers stood open-mouthed, frozen in place for a full minute.
What the bejesus was that? Someone finally said.
Lula hauled herself to her feet and adjusted her purse on her shoulder.
I'm gonna sue someone, she said. I could have been killed. I'm lucky I wasn't stampeded on. This cow plant is negligent. I'm calling my lawyer.
You were the one who opened the gate, I told her.
Yeah, but they should have had a lock on it, so I couldn't do that. And what are we doing with cows in Trenton anyway? How many times do I have to ask that question?
Someone screamed half a block away, and I heard the sound of cow feet clomping down a street somewhere. Men were pouring out of the plant, organizing search teams. A big black cow trotted into the lot. Three men took off after it, and the cow ran away, headed for the 7-Eleven on Broad.
Well, I guess our business is done here, Lula said. Now what?
Now we ride around and try to spot Butch. And we get out of the parking lot before someone remembers Lula was the one who opened the gate.
I kind of worked up an appetite being around all those cows, Lula said, climbing into the Jeep. I wouldn't mind getting a burger.
I plugged the key into the ignition. After we find Butch.
What are we going to do if we find him? Lula wanted to know. Are you going to run him over with the Jeep? Looks to me like that's the only way you'll catch him. He's as big as one of those cows.
I drove out of the lot, turned at the corner, and stopped to let a cow cross the street in front of me.
I bet this happens all the time, Lula said. These people are probably used to having cows in their yards. It's probably like living next to the jail. I bet there's people escaping from the jail all the time, too.
Anything was possible, but for all the time I've lived in Trenton, which was all my life, I've never heard of cows making a run for it out of the packing plant. Two cop cars raced through an intersection one street over. I could hear men shouting to each other. I heard a cow bellow not far off. A man bolted from between two houses with a cow hot on his heels. The guy scrambled on top of a car, and the cow ran off in another direction. I doubled back to the plant and spotted Butch getting into his car. The lot was filled with crazed cows and crazed cow catchers, so I decided to follow Butch and attempt a capture somewhere else. Butch took Broad to Hamilton, found his way to Cluck in a Bucket, and went straight to the drive-through window. He was driving a white Taurus that was a bunch of years old. Easy to follow.
This is enough to give me religion, Lula said. How good is this? We follow some idiot to Cluck in a Bucket, just when I'm hungry, too. I bet it's a bottle. You got your bottle, right?
Yeah.
I knew it, Lula said. The bottle's working for us.
Butch put his order in, pulled up to the next window, and I hung back.
I got an order, Lula said to me. Pull up to the window.
I'm not getting stuck in the drive-thru. If he parks, you can go inside and get your order while I make the capture. If he leaves with his food, you'll have to wait.
Okay, I could do that, Lula said. That sounds like a plan.
Butch got his food and parked nose in, facing the side of the building. Lula jumped out of the Jeep and hustled inside. And I parked directly behind Butch, blocking his exit. My first choice was to talk to him and convince him to come downtown with me. My second choice was to give him a shot with my stun gun and handcuff him to his car. Then I'd pay a tow truck to drag him to the police station. I'd still be way ahead. Ordinarily, I'd stun a guy and Lula and I would wrestle him into my back seat. Since Butch was 300 pounds soaking wet, wrestling wasn't practical. I trotted up to the Taurus and bent to talk to Butch. He jumped at my voice, a piece of burger fell out of his mouth, and he shrieked like a girl. I just want to talk to you, I said.
I'm not going to jail, he yelled at me.
He threw the Taurus into reverse. I hit him once with the stun gun, and he twitched and squeaked, but that was it. The Taurus plowed into Ranger's Jeep and knocked it back about 10 feet, totally bashing in the entire left side. Butch slammed the Taurus into drive, jumped the sidewalk, made a sharp turn, and took off out of the lot. Lula sashayed out with two bags of food and stood looking at the Jeep.
You're in trouble, she said. You wrecked Ranger's Jeep.
She looked around.
Where's Butch?
Gone.
He must be a real fast eater.
I walked up to his car and he panicked. I hit him with the stun gun and it had no effect.
No shit, Lula said. You need a cattle prod for him.
I hauled my cell phone out and dialed Ranger.
Babe, he said.
Bad news, I told him. I sort of wrecked your Jeep.
It was only a matter of time, he said,
and he disconnected. 5 minutes later, a Rangeman SUV drove into the parking lot. Hal and another guy got out, looked at the Jeep, and smiled.
No disrespect, Hal said to me, but you've done better.
This was true. I was driving Ranger's Porsche one time, and it got smashed flat as a pancake by a garbage truck. Hard to top that.
Raphael will take care of the jeep, Hal said, and I'm at your disposal. Where would you ladies like to go?
The bonds office, I told him. We need to regroup.
How did it go? Connie asked. Did you catch anyone?
Nope, Lula said, but we trashed Ranger's jeep, and we did some other stuff, but I might not want to talk about it.
Connie gave me raised eyebrows. Lula opened a gate at the packing plant and set a whole bunch of cows loose, I said. They're probably in Bordentown by now.
They were like born free cows, Lula said.
We aren't doing so good in the money-raising department, Connie said. I slouched in the orange chair in front of her desk. Maybe we should call the police.
Or we could ship Vinny off to Brazil, Lula said. We could put him in nitwit protection.
My phone rang, and I groaned when I saw the number. It was my mother. When are you picking him up? My mother wanted to know. Who? You know who. He's in your father's chair watching television, drinking coffee. Lucille kicked him out. Good for her, my mother said. I'd kick him out too, but I can't get him out of the chair. When are you coming to get him? Here's the thing, I said to my mother. He doesn't have any place to stay. He can't stay here, and I swear I'll never make you another pineapple upside-down cake if you don't get him out of here. I'll be right there. I grabbed my tote bag and stood. We have to get Vinny, I said to Lula. My mother's done with him.
You can't bring him back here, Connie said.
Can I put him in your house?
Not even for a moment.
I looked at Lula.
Nuh-uh, Lula said. I don't even like him, and soon as he's left alone, he'll be trying all my special dresses on.
Lula's attention moved to the plate glass window in the front of the office.
It's the Moon Man, she said.
Mooner pushed the door open and gave us the peace sign.
Ladies, he said, how goes it?
It goes okay, I said. How goes it with you?
I don't know. I think they might have put some wacky mushrooms on my pizza last night. I was driving down Broad Street just now, and I swear I thought a cow was walking down the street.
Huh. Lula said. That's crazy, all right.
Some cows got loose at the packing plant this morning, I told Mooner. Mooner clapped a hand to his heart.
That's a mega relief. Last time I saw cows walking down the street, I had to go into rehab.
What were you doing on Broad? I asked him.
I was handing out flyers. I got some for you, too.
Mooner put a stack of papers on Connie's desk.
The Alliance is having its annual HobbitCon, and I'm in charge this year. It's an awesome honor.
I've never been to a Hobbit Con, Lula said. What do you do there?
You dress up like a hobbit, Mooner said, and you get a hobbit name, and there's all kinds of hobbit food, and there are hobbit games, and hobbit music.
I might like that, Lula said, taking a flyer off Connie's desk and reading it. I'm always open to new experiences. Do you got a hobbit name?
Lula asked him.
Bungo Goodchild, Mooner said.
I could see that, Lula said. What would my name be?
You could be Alvian Jumpsweller Fairdowns, Mooner said, and Connie could be Primula Boffin.
What if I don't want to be Primula Boffin? Connie said. What about Stephanie? Lula wanted to know. What's her hobbit name?
Isalira Thorny.
Yeah, she looks like Isalira Thorny, Lula said.
I have a problem, I said to Mooner. Vinny's wife kicked him out of the house, and he hasn't got any place to stay. Do you suppose you could babysit him for me this afternoon and maybe tonight?
Whoa, I'd be honored, Mooner said. Vinny's the dude. He's, like, famous. He runs ASC.
What's ASC? I asked Mooner.
Alternative Sex Convention. It's like Cutting Edge.
That's a shocker, Connie said.
Yeah, Mooner said. ASC is huge. Maybe Vinny could give me some pointers.
Unless you got hobbits that wear chaps and nothing else, you probably don't want any of Vinny's pointers, Lula said.
Do you remember where my parents live? I asked Mooner.
Yep, I could find it with my eyes closed.
I wrote the address on the back of my card and gave it to Mooner. Just in case, I said. Call me if there are problems. Don't let Vinny out of your sight, and stay away from Stark Street. Mooner ambled out of the office and